Okay, so as we get closer to Pesach, hopefully, in addition to Mechiras Chametz and Maos Chitin, which is going to be an ongoing reminder to be able to support everybody in the community, we're preparing for Pesach, trying to understand what we're going to be doing again in Mirat Hashem in 3 weeks from tonight. And really, the Hachanos can feel like you're trying to drink from a fire hydrant. There's so much to do, there's so much to internalize, there's so much to prepare. And so it behooves us to start early, so at least we can grab what we can, so that we'll be adequately prepared. You know, people have so many Haggadahs, probably thousands, hundreds are probably published every year, and collections are just unbelievable. So I'd like to understand tonight, and we'll get into more of the Vartlach, and I'd like to compare it maybe to seeing the forest from the trees. So tonight is the forest. What are we really doing? What are we going to be achieving together on the Leil HaSeder? And then next week, Be'ezras Hashem, we'll get into some of the finer points of the Haggadah. The first question, obviously, is what is the Seder? Why do we call it a Seder? Why don't we call it, I don't know, what have you thought? What other things could we call it? This experience that we go on traveling back in Jewish history to relive Shibud Mitzrayim and ultimately going to the Seder of Rav Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva. It's not just slavery. Go back to Avram Avinu, Lavan.
Sudas
HaGeula, right? Interesting suggestion because the Vilna Gaon had the Sudas HaMashiach at the end, on Acharon Shel Pesach, so you have Seudas Shel Geula should be at the beginning, and the Seudas HaMashiach can be two bookends, very appropriately, to Chag HaPesach. But Seder, right, what does Seder mean? We're not referring to the Seder in Yeshiva, but it means some order, it means a structure. There has to be some path that we take on the Seder night. Now, to many, when we talk about what happened, what are we celebrating on Chag HaPesach, What do we call when the first thing we're going to say? The first mention that we have of Pesach actually is going to be in Shemona Esrei at Maariv. V'titein lanu Hashem Elokeinu bi'ahava, mo'adim l'simcha, chagim u'zmanim l'sasan, es yom, chag ha-Pesach hazeh. Zman chayruseinu. Exactly. It's a time of freedom. Now, if you were to ask the Founding Fathers what freedom means, what would they tell you? Freedom of religion, political freedom, pursuit of happiness, right? Basically, whatever we want. We can each define freedom in our own way. Because when we're free, no one's able to hold us back. You know, being held back is something that people find very uncomfortable. People rebel against systems when they feel too constrained, and it's, you know, maybe it starts in high school and some people never really grow out of it. And they always feel like they need to be rebelling against whether it's Yiddishkeit, whether it's family, whether it's government, whether you name it. There's always something to go against. And some people are just l'shitasam, they always need to find something to take the contrary position. But that's not chirus. That means that you're enslaved to being contrarian. And that's not free. So Seder really gives us a structure in which we can be free. Because if you're all over the place, then it's anarchy, it's chaos. You don't know to go that way, you go that way. It's too overwhelming because there's no clear path. But when you create a structure, so now I know I'm going to be within these boundaries. All of this is going to be legitimate. So chayrus that we achieve is a one of structure. The Rav Soloveitchik explains that in Makas Bechoros, when Klal Yisrael were forbidden from leaving their houses, it was to teach them that chayrus doesn't mean, now the Egyptians are going to be suffering, you can go and, you know, ransack and pillage Egypt, you can take everything out of the stores in Cairo. But rather, no, it's dangerous. You can't take vengeance. Seder means that there has to be an order. So in Rav Ari Marcus published a Haggadah last year that is absolutely phenomenal and has within it, you know, each page has Yesodos, that they don't quote the footnote, they don't have citations in the actual text of the Haggadah, it's all in the back, but they allude, it's like the Haksav HaKabbalah also has different Mefarshim that he weaves into his own pshat, and you can't tell what's the Ramban and what's the Sforno. But Rabbi Marcus's Haggadah He talks about Kedusha, which is obviously the first step. Right? You talk about the Seder. So the Seder night has 15 steps, and each step is like a sign on the highway, and you have to keep going until you reach your final destination in big letters, right? Nirtza. You've arrived at the end. But at the beginning, the first stop, the first sign, mile marker on the highway is Kadesh. So he says that these rules and regulations and prohibitions don't define Kedusha, but they accompany it. Because holiness itself, as clarified in the Reishis Chachma, is composed of two parts, a separation from the realm of physicality and the infusion of the light of the Shekhinah of Hashem's presence. So it's crucial to recognize that Kedusha doesn't mean a rejection of the material world. On the contrary, holiness impacts and uplifts mundane acts. What does that mean? When one abstains from activities prohibited by the Torah, and his mind and her mind or desires are immersed in true godliness, then even eating, sleeping, and other corporal involvements are transformed into spiritual accomplishments. Right? Two people may be involved in the same exact physical act. You can go and sit on a subway or sit in a table at Grand Central Station. They have restaurants. I think there's a Mendy's in the basement. There used to be like 20 years ago. Right? You go. Two people buy a knish at Mendy's in Grand Central Station, and one person is indulging, and one person hasn't eaten all day because they just came from the hospital to do a mitzvah bikur cholim, and they mamish have no energy left, and they need a little bit of something to get them home so that they can continue on with their day and their other responsibilities in their avodas Hashem. Right? Two people can be involved in the same exact act of sleeping, yet one is involved in a holy pursuit while the other is doing nothing more than a hibernating bear. Quite a stark contrast. So when we recite Kiddush and Shabbos and Yontif, we're declaring that our ensuing physical activities are to be elevated by the status of the day. Of course, there's sanctity to these days, irrespective of what we do with it. But by pronouncing the day to be holy, says R' Soloveitchik, we're adding an extra layer to that sanctity which affects the positive mitzvahs of Oneg and Kavod. So we can't eat before reciting Kiddush and Shabbos and Yontif, let's say both at night and in the morning, because on those days we have to first endow our enjoyment with spiritual significance. Yes, you can have beautiful, delicious meals for Shabbos and Yontif. We come home, the Seder table is set nicer than any other night of the year. People put their jewelry on. You want to feel free. You put everything, all your material wealth is sitting there on the table, a beautiful ka'ara and a becher and cufflinks and necklaces, everything. But it first has to start. The first step in the process is not just a delicious meal, is not, you know, a good cup of wine, but it's Kiddush. And the Kiddush through the wine, because we're imbuing within the physicality that great bottle of wine that we've been saving up for the Seder, because that has to come about through Kedusha. Rav Hirsch adds one more point. He says, Kiddush Mamakam Suda is necessary because a Jew demonstrates holiness in precisely the most physical areas of his life. While the Rambam includes the Kriya Shema and Tefillah and Tefillin and Mezuzah in Sefer HaKedusha, he focuses exclusively on two areas of halacha, the laws of food and the laws of sexual relations. On Shabbos and festivals, we transform the material into spiritual by the power of Hashem's word. So this is the first step in the process, is acknowledging the Kedusha that's incumbent upon us. That unlike Shabbos, which has its own inherent Kedusha, we have the capacity and the obligation to sanctify time through Kiddush HaChodesh. We're going to read Parshas HaChodesh this Shabbos, Bezras Hashem. We'll talk about us sanctifying time. That, yeah, of course, the 15th of Nisan's going to come, but who created that calendar? Who is the one that says, oh, it's Rosh Chodesh, I saw the new moon? It's us. And so we need to create that sanctity. That is the first step as we think about what are we going to do tonight. The very first step sets the tone for us of being able to think about the holiness that's all around us, the latent holiness that exists in our house, as we spoke about on Shabbos, right? Of having a kedusha, of enhancing the kedusha of the bias simply by doing things. And we're going to come back to that in a minute. There's a second answer that's brought by the Beis Aron, echoing the ideas of the Ramchal and Reb Tzadok HaKohen Lublin, that the entire year, the kedusha of the entire year emanates from this night. That everything comes from the Leil HaSeder. Now, why is that? How do we understand Pesach? You'd think maybe it's Yom Kippur, maybe it's Rosh Hashanah. So he says that the Leil HaSeder represents the birth, literally the birth of Klal Yisrael. Hashem took us out like a fetus coming out in utero. being born out of the slavery, the bondage of Egypt. And so the birth of a person, what's the simcha that accompanies the birth of a baby, whether it's a child or a grandchild or Mir Tashem, a great-grandchild? The simcha is the potential, the ability to continue the nitzchias, to perpetuate the legacy of the family, of the ancestors who came before that baby, and to see in the eyes of that baby the innocence, the potential, the capacity that it has to be able to somehow synthesize all of the unique kochos and nefesh of all of their ancestors, and to realize that potential, to know that these parents are capable of guiding them, of giving the baby that structure and the nurture and the love to be able to achieve its potential. That is the simcha of the birth of a baby. And that tonight, or Yirtz Hashem in a few weeks, they'll put the simcha of the Leil HaSeder, the simcha of the Yontif, of the first, second night of Pesach, is the potential that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw in us. To see the Avas Hashem that we have to Him, but also Ata V'chartanu, this is the night that Hashem chose us as His people to take out, to give us, to set us on a path towards Kabbalah Satorah, and ultimately bringing us to Eretz Yisrael, Binyan Beis HaBechira, to be able to be Ovdei Hashem properly. And so that's really what we're celebrating. It's the simcha of the potential. The Leil HaSeder has this incredible light, this incredible spiritual power and capacity. That this is the time when we say, Harei anu v'oneinu v'onei v'oneinu hayu mishubadim l'paru b'mitzrayim. Had Hashem not taken us out, we'd still be there. So it's a stark contrast. It's a stark comment to make. How do you know? That was a long time ago. What makes you think that at some point there wouldn't have been somebody who would have been able to inspire a period of Bali Tshuva, a group of people who were going to come closer to Hashem? You know what? We've had enough of this Shibud. You know, we're empowerment. We're going to rise up. And the Arab Spring is going to start from Egypt. And it's not just going to be a political movement, but the Jews are going to be part of it. We would have gotten out at least a couple years ago, you have to figure. We would have been with that, you know, the Arab Spring, banging down the doors of the palace in Cairo. So how can we possibly say that we still would have been there? And the answer is because we would have lost the spiritual connection. No longer would we be the children of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, because we would have continued to have sunk to unbelievable depths of spirituality. We would have been completely detached from that which HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that I'm going to raise your children up and I'm going to make them a nation and I'm going to bring them to Eretz Yisrael. Because if we didn't have that, then we would still be there, because we wouldn't have this Chos Avos. We wouldn't have that connection to them. And so the night that we're born has this aura, this incredible spiritual light that from which every other Yontif Kedusha is derived from. Some of the Hasidic Rebbes say that every day of Pesach is connected, is correlates to another Yontif around the year. And you go through, you know, the first night of Pesach, Yirtz Hashem, it won't be, it'll be the Yontif of Tisha B'Av, but historically it's been the first night of Pesach is always is the night of Tisha B'Av, when we're sitting on the floor. You go from the Leil HaSeder to Mamish on the floor in Avelos. The second night correlates to Shavuos and Rosh Hashanah and Simchas Torah v'chule. But why do the letters represent this? So this night comes along with all the other Yom Tovim. It's just a proof that the power, the spiritual power that exists on the first night of Pesach, it's not just something like, you know, we look forward to it, we anticipate it with such excitement and enthusiasm because we prepare for it for so long. But the reason that we prepare for it is because it has so much potential in it. And so once we understand this, we can understand another unusual minhag that we have on the Leil HaSeder, that married men will wear a kittel. Some married men wear a kittel at their Seder table. So we know that usually the only time that people wear a kittel is Yom Kippur. Maybe you wear it, some people have the minhag of wearing it at a chuppah, maybe some people they put a coat over it. But why is this? And the Otzer HaMinhagim says that white is a joyous color, right? A kala wears white. It's something that has tremendous simcha related to it. And so this is the night that we're chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the night of Ata V'chartanu. And so it's an expression of incredible divine love, Hashem, for us, that we try to do whatever we can to reciprocate, to use the props, to remind us of the matzah that Hashem let us eat, and remind us of everything of the Geula and all the expressions of Geula and all of those. That's what Hashem said to us. And that's what He said to me and to my ancestors, and we want to connect to that because we have that relationship. And so all of these things bring us back to strengthening the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? We should feel His love and feel optimistic about the love that He has for us and the positive impact that all of that has on us. And that's why, if you open up the Haggadah, what's the end of the Haggadah? Most Haggadahs, huh? L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. When we turn the page, after Chag Gadya, what's the last piece of the Seder night? Shir HaShirim. After you clear away all the dishes, if you're still awake, sit back down, and we read Shir HaShirim. Why? And the answer is because this is a night of incredible, intense love and passion between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is expressed through the beautiful words of Shir HaShirim. And so, yeah, you can get involved and continue Chol Hamar B'Lesapa Hareza Meshubach, but ultimately, that is the ending point of the Seder. Rav Pinkus says that's why there are four cups of wine. The Dalad Lashonos of Geula are expressed through the four cups of wine, the Dalad Kosos, that are spread out throughout the Seder. You look at the mitzvah of matzah, so you want to darshan, okay, this is what matzah is all about, and this is what mara is all about, and this is what the Karban Pesach is all about, and this is why I'm leaning, and this is why I'm dipping, and we have a vart for each and every maisa. But all of them are only happening once. And the only thing that happens over and over and over and over again, four times in all, the most repeated action that we do at the Seder is drinking a glass of wine, a cup of wine, a becher of wine, whatever you have on your table. Right? So the road marker of the Leil HaSeder, according to some opinions, were actually set up the structure. If you look at a building, so there has to be a certain foundation, and then you have the girders and the steel beams. That's everything is built around these four cups, the Dalad Kosos. Why? Because Yayin Samach Levav Anosh. We want to be happy. We want to bring out that Avas Hashem that somehow sometimes gets buried deep within us. And so we need to do certain things to bring it out of ourselves. We want to have, right, we know what Purim was like. It's not a simcha shel holulus. And the little bit of intoxication, it's not just that people like to drink wine, but if you have the physical ability, your health doesn't preclude you from drinking wine. So there is, Chazal talk about the element of intoxication that allows a person to feel cheiros. It allows you to feel free. It allows you to feel uplifted because, let's face it, we don't usually drink four cups of wine in the span of looking at the audience here tonight, I don't think that most of us drink four cups of wine. I speak for myself, certainly not. But at the end of that process, you can't help but feel a little bit elated. Your halal is a lot more simchadik than it would be if you started out the Seder singing halal at the beginning. And so at the very core is the ability to bring out what lies at the very depth of our neshama. And the Rambam writes at the end of Hilchos Geirushin, right, that even the person, the worst bum, who's ma'agin his wife, who won't let his wife get remarried, and refuses to give her again, why is it that you can give him makas mardas, that you can beat him senseless almost senseless? Because you want to get to a point of rotzani, where he says, okay, I want it. Why? It seems like that should be coerced. That should be just as forbidden as any other ploy that Chazal prohibited. And the answer, says the Rambam so beautifully, is because deep, deep down, and sometimes it takes a lashing to get to that point, but on the Seder night it takes a little bit of wine to bring out what we really are, who we really are, and what kind of relationship we actually want to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so the goal of the Seder is to be Bnei Chorin, to be free, to be in a meaningful relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for us to feel His love and for Him, reciprocally, for Him to feel ours. And then we move on to Orchatz. Now again, there are 15 steps. There are 15 parts of this Seder. There are 15 walls of the structure that Chazal created for the Leil HaSeder. And the reason for this, perhaps, is a remez, there were 15 steps in the Beis HaMikdash leading up to the Azara. So you think about it, what does that mean? That it means that every step I can get to a little bit closer to the Shekhinah. The Gemara in Chagiga talks about how there are different steps seven heavens altogether, and there's space in between each one. And ultimately, atop the top level is the Kisei HaKavod. So if we're able to reach and really focus on the avoda of Chag HaPesach, of the potential that exists within the Seder, that it's not just something that we run through. But as all of you obviously appreciate by being here tonight, and hachanos that you're certainly doing at home in the interim before next week's shir and the week after that and everything else, right? You understand the potential that exists, and that the opportunity that after the 15th step, now you're ready to sing Shir HaShirim with a certain love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we understand the first step is Kadesh, is sanctifying. As we said before, we want to sanctify the physicality of the beauty and the grandeur and the splendor that exists at the Leil HaSeder. And Shekodesh Tiyuli, we have to be holy people for Hashem, and so we sanctify ourselves, we sanctify the day, we sanctify the food and the drink and all of the mundane. We elevate it. And we sanctify ourselves and we recognize that the Kedushas HaZman, the holiness and the sanctity of the time, of the Moadim, of these holidays, really comes down to our own responsibility. But what's Orchatz? Especially when you consider that in some families, only one person washes their hands for Orchatz, and that is the Baal HaSeder. Some people, everybody washes. In some families, only one person washes. So the whole reason that we wash in the first place is because we're concerned about Tumah. We're concerned about ritual impurity. It used to be, back in the time that the Beis HaMikdash existed, people were very familiar with how to avoid becoming Tamei. And one of the ways that a person can become Tamei is by touching certain liquids. The Gemara talks about seven different liquids that can make something ra'oi l'kabel tuma, fit to become Tamei. So if you took, if there was an apple that was lying here and it was dry and something Tamei touched, it doesn't necessarily become Tamei, or if my hands are a little bit Tamei, but if I have water on it or dew or milk or blood or honey, whatever it is, and one of those things touches the apple, and then I, with my Tamei, my impure hands, then I touch the apple, I've just rendered the apple impure. So to avoid that, they used to wash their hands before they ate, so that when they had chulin, when they had regular food, their hands were clean. And this way, when they ate truma, if they ate truma, then their hands were also clean, because they were just used to making sure that they were constantly in a state of ritual purity. So why do we do it today? When was the last time any of you came in contact with truma? All of our food is chulin. So what's this about? This is a step in the process. We just said that each step of the Seder elevates us closer to the Kisei HaKavod. It brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we're bringing in something that they used to do thousands of years ago, because the Beis HaMikdash used to exist and we used to have to worry about these things. How is this meaningful? Where do we connect? And how do I step up and get a little boost from washing my hand? I don't make a bracha. It's not like the recitation, Baruch Atah Hashem, okay, with a tremendous kavana and slavas, and I'm shuckling, and that's not it. There's no bracha. I'm talking. I'm continuing my conversation after Kadesh. What's this about? So the Taz, who's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, says that we do it simply Zecher LeMikdash. We do a lot of things, Zecher LeMikdash. Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel, Kinasa Hillel, Bezman Shebeis HaMikdash, Shayikayim. We have the egg on the Ka'ara, Zecher the Karban Chagiga. We have the Karban Pesach. There are lots of things that we do to remind us that we used to have a Beis HaMikdash, and that our world remains incomplete, that the Seder is incomplete and very different. That as beautiful as our Sedarim Mimir Tashem will be with whomever we're lucky to spend it with, they're still not quite as joyous as it would be if we had spent, Emir Tashem, we will spend the afternoon in Yerushalayim, and somehow the walls of the Beis HaMikdash are going to expand, and they're going to be able to, there'll be enough room for everybody, and then we'll all come together, and we'll stay in the hotels in Yerushalayim. It's going to be beautiful. Right? But if that doesn't happen, our Seder is going to be incomplete. It's not going to be as nice as it should be. But this night of the Leil HaSeder is a night that we're supposed to be full of hope. We're supposed to think it's not complete, right? There is a Tisha B'Av looming a couple of months from now that's going to be on the very same night of the week. And so we think about the Zecher LeMikdash. We think about the hope, again, the potential that we have as Hashem's special chosen people, and the responsibility that brings with it. But it's also, how are we going to conduct ourselves? We can't forget Right? It's not just a maisa for the Chafetz Chaim to have his bag packed and ready to go to chazer the halachos of the avoda, that we should only learn about the avoda on Yom Kippur or Ezehu Makomon in the morning in the Mishnah that we say in Karbanos, but rather we should know, what are we going to do? How am I going to conduct? How am I going to eat a meal? I have to wash my hands. And so it reminds us, the Mirat Hashem, that it should happen again soon. But why is this a step in the Seder? So the night is about Kadesh. It's about sanctifying ourselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Orchatz teaches us that we need to prepare ourselves before we come back to the King. We can't think that if I do all of the mitzvahs halayla, and I eat my matzah, and I remove all chametz, any shemetz of chametz, there's not even a crumb that wouldn't even be batal be'elef, I remove everything from my house, and even alpi, you know, the Bali HaMusar, that I'm removing the chimotz min alev, that the gaiva and the ego that I have, everything. I'm doing Pesach 150%. But still, you have to do the work. Mashiach isn't going to come unless we put in the effort. And so we have to practice. These are things that habituate us to remind ourselves, Zecher l'Chorban, that there's Zecher l'Mikdash, that things could be better. And if we continue to do all those things, so imagine if you continue to do the things that are Zecher l'Mikdash, then Kal v'Chomer, you'll be even more careful and more medactic about the mitzvos that you have to keep that are incumbent upon all of us on this night. It's all about Hachana. Right, and we spoke on Shabbos as well about, you know, this is the same type of maisa as the rachza and the kiyor. Right, the washing of the kiyor, as we said on Shabbos, was not something that really changed the status of the kohen. It was a hechsher havoda. The kohen putting on the begadim, the Ramban says in the Hasagos on the Rambam, that putting on the begadim is just a hechsher. It just prepares him for the work. And the kohen who's washing his hands and feet, his hands weren't dirty, the Chinuch says. It wasn't in terms of nikiyos, it wasn't in terms of tumah. It was just a way of preparing him to elevate the kavod habayis. And so this is a way of elevating ourselves as we approach these very, very lofty mitzvahs that we're about to fulfill, the mitzvah de'araisa v'achilas matzah, this mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the Dalet Kosos, and the achilas maror, and all of that, it requires a certain level of hachana. We have Kiddush every other night. Every other night of Yontif and every Shabbos we have Kiddush. So that in and of itself wouldn't necessarily make us feel like we're elevated. It could still just be another night of Yontif. But Orchatz, the seemingly mundane washing that doesn't really have any halacha, any negiyas lemaisa, it's not something that's practical, elevates us and shows us this type of hachana is meaningful. And really what that shows us, again and again, that any type of preparation that we do over the coming weeks, whether it's something mundane as washing and cleaning and scrubbing and vacuuming and whatever it may be, in addition to the learning that we do to prepare ourselves for the Seder, and by the way, there are other meals of Yontif, and you should have Divrei Torah prepared for the other meals also. It's not just, you know, you flame out after two nights and that's it, and you have nothing else to talk about than Dvarim Betalim. Prepare for the other nights of Yontif also. But each of those hachanos, all those preparations are valuable. And that allows us, in Yeretz Hashem, that will be zocha to bring the Karban Pesach on Erev Pesach. And then we move on to Karpas, which is probably about dipping Yosef's Ksones Pasim into the dam. How do we get here? So we find the only time that it really mentions Karpas in Tanakh is, as we read last Sunday, Chor Karpasu Techeles. Right? It's the Begadim that Mordechai wore is a certain color. So Rashi in Parshas Vayeshev, when he tries to explain what pasim means, he says that it's a tunic, it's a type of garment. Kimo karpas utecheles. He says it's like karpas. So Rav Matasyo with Solomon Shlita, who's the Mashkiach of Lakewood, says that one of the themes of this Leil HaSeder is Avas Yisrael. It's just love, right? We come together, kol dichvin, yetzev yifsach, we invite anybody. We give ma'amos chitin to anybody in the community, whoever needs. You need a meal tonight, come in and join us. It's a night of Avas Yisrael. And so we dip way before Magid, we dip way before Yachatz, before we break apart and we show that Klal Yisrael is Nebuch Tzibrachin, that we're broken apart. We show that we remember the mistake that we made and we want to be able to atone and to make up for it. We know on Tisha B'Av we talk about what happened and how that Avera was exploited and changed the course of Jewish history. And so this is the first time
that Klal Yisrael was broken. But when it comes to Yosef, when the brother is split apart, right, you have Yaakov was the Bechir Sheba Avos because all of his children were Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, but even within that, there was this chasm, this break among the siblings. And so we remember the blood that the brothers dipped in the coat into, and so we also dip something into something salty, something that reminds us of this bitterness. So this is the Jewish people breaking, right? And we take the middle matzah, which is right, Kohen Levi Yisrael, so Levi is the middle matzah. Why do we take Levi? Because even though they weren't involved in the Shibud, right? Shevet Levi sat it out. They were learning Torah and Goshen the whole time. They were not involved. They were not enslaved. And yet we take their matzah, the matzah that represents Shevet Levi, to show that they were also involved. They were also concerned. What was the very first step of the Geula of Klal Yisrael? When Moshe Rabbeinu goes out and he looks at Vayar b'sivlo sam, he lent his heart. He wasn't enslaved. He's coming from the palace. And Rashi says, Nasan eina v'libo lios meitzer aleim. He lends his heart and his eyes to be in pain with them, to empathize with them, to feel what they're feeling and to be bothered by it. And so that's the break. One Jew connecting to another, and the Avas Yisrael ultimately, right, all the Gemara in Kedushin says that the relationships that we have down here with our parents, with our friends and our peers are supposed to model for us the relationship that we're supposed to have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we're able to work on and be misakin the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro and the Avas Yisrael, then by extension, we'll get to a level of Avas Hashem that's going to elevate us as well. Rav Shmuel Brazil points out that the three matzahs represent the three avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that they were three pillars that we stand on. And each one of them represents a different facet of the yisodos of emunah, the foundation, the foundational beliefs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we have. And so Avraham represents belief in HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the here and now, the present. Hashem is Haya Hova V'Yiyah, he is, but he's very much running the world in the present moment. And the one who, Avram Avinu, who received challenges from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who heard Hashem's challenge, and then ultimately was tested time and time again, each in the moment, so Avraham shows us how to live a life of faith and belief in God in the moment, no matter what. Yitzchak represents the future. Why? Because he was willing to give up his own future for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was willing to be Moser Nefesh as a carbon at the Akedah. This is what Hashem wants. If this is Ratzon Hashem, then that's what I'm going to do. Now, they bring down, I just had to share this, the aisle, the ram that was taken in place of Yitzchak, right? Each ram has two horns. So one ram was one shofar from that aisle was blown when? You're going to say it. Just say it. Try. Rosh Hashanah from when? Matan Torah. Right, the shofar goes, blows, and announces Hashem's Shechina is coming down. When is the second shofar in Yiratz Hashem going to be blown? When Mashiach comes. So you have this shofar of Yitzchak representing the Semuna all the way into the future. He who was willing to give of himself and to give up the future, his own future, is symbolic of our own collective future. Now, the two parts of Hallel and the Leil HaSeder, the two parts, we break it up. We say two prakim towards the end of Magid, and then we wait until after Shulchan Aruch, until after the meal, after benching, to conclude the Hallel. It's unusual. Why would we don't ever break up Hallel during the rest of the year. Why do we do it on the Seder night? So we find that the first two prakim of Hallel that we recite at the end of Magid are really totally focused on Shevach v'Hodah l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're totally involved in praising Hashem, and there's no request, there's no long-term goal and aspiration, it's just thank you Hashem. It's pure thanks and appreciation and gratitude. But after that, there's a lot of petitions and prayer and hope. And the Hallel after Baruch is the Hallel of Galus, which is something that, you know, is forward-focused, or at least it should be, rather than wallowing in the present, right? To always be looking, how do I grow? How can I get there? How can I get to out of the galus? And it's something where we recite the Hallel in the present, but very much an eye towards the future. And so, Yachatz, we break the matzah, because it's hard to have emunah. during these difficult times. There are days when we feel like we're never getting out of here. Maybe it's not even days, maybe it's months, maybe it's years. Imagine living through the Holocaust and thinking, somehow they did it, right? They had Sidarim in the Holocaust, in the camps, and they somehow baked matzah with tremendous emuna. But most Jews probably thought to themselves, this is it. And for many of them, they were right. There was no future for them, for their families that were exterminated, the communities that were wiped out. And to be able to rebuild, so many of them lost their emuna, because how could they? They just saw Gehenna in Olam Hazeh. But this is the future, that the present that looks so bleak. We have to have faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that just as He kept His Havtacha to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, He's going to continue to keep His promise to us. And so we have emuna in the past and in the future, because we know Moshe Emes V'Sarasu Emes. The past gives us that faith that we've endured so much more, and we know that Im Yirtzeh Hashem, very soon Hashem is going to fulfill His promise to us. And some say that that's why the Imahos are compared to the Dalad Kosos. The Avos, you know, or Emunah, these different facets of Emunah. But the Imahos, what do they represent? V'hotzeisi, v'yatzalti, v'ga'alti, v'lakachti. Don't tell me about big grand ideas. Don't tell me about faith. Just nurture me. Just take care of me. Take me, hold me, redeem me. Take care of us. And so you don't have, you know, the father is giving the spiel and he's going on and lecturing about deep philosophical ideas, and the mother, okay, don't worry about it. Here, come with me. I'll take you out. I'll make sure you're safe and you have food and clothing to wear and no one's going to bother you anymore, and I'll bring you to a place of safety and refuge and spiritual oasis of Eretz Yisrael. And that is the Dalad Kosos relating to the Imahos. Then we move on to Halach Ma'anya. The Ma'aral brings down there. My father-in-law, Shlita, always talks about the duality of the night. You have, you know, Cheiros and Shibud and Matzah somehow, depending on what point of the Seder you talk about Matzah, you could be talking about one of two things. You could be talking about Dvarim Lechem Sho'onim Alav Dvarim Harbeh, this bread that's on the table that's supposed to facilitate extensive discussion, questions and answers with children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and great-grandparents and great-grandparents. It's supposed to talk and facilitate a dialogue because we're free, and this is what we hold up to represent our freedom, because this is what we ate when we became free. Right? So this is a beautiful thing, and people might not think it tastes so good, but spend an extra couple dollars. Get good matzah that's going to make you feel like, oh, Mitzvah Derais, I'm so excited to chomp into this. It tastes so delicious. Find something good. Don't complain about it. And you find, this is my matzah, right? But on the other hand, at a certain point in the city, I'll say, this is lechemoni. Poor people, you can't be poor today, but poor people used to eat matzah. Poor people ate it because they didn't have time and they didn't have yeast and they didn't have the opportunity to let it rise on marble at just the right humidity and temperature out of the sun and the Viking ovens, and the bread is going to be, oh, it smells delicious. They didn't have that luxury. But rather all they had is lechem oni, it's poor man's bread. So the Maharal doesn't like that. Maral, it's all about emunah, it's all about lechem shedodim alav dvarim harbe, it's all about faith in God. Matzah is this bread of redemption. It's delicious. It's awesome. It's what we're going to eat when we're redeemed again. And it's going to happen right away. Don't drag me down with lechem oni. And the reason it's lechem oni is only because there's no additives. So you think, okay, it doesn't taste so good, but it's just flour and water. It doesn't have the salt and the spices and the, who knows, whatever you like to put in your favorite, you know, focaccia bread. It doesn't have that stuff. Rav Yerucham Olshin is a Rosh Hashiva in one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Lakewood. He says that there are two types of matzah. We alluded to this a couple of nights ago between Mincha Maariv, that there are two types of achilas matzah. There's the matzah that you eat to be mekayim the mitzvah of achilas matzah on the Seder night, and then you have the achila the other nights of Sukkah, of Pesach. And according to some, even the other achila, the other types, the other matzah that you eat, or Shulchan Aruch, the other matzah that you eat, l'tayavon, for your own desire, to satiate yourself. So all of that is a kiyum according to the Vilna Gaon of Shiva Seon Tochlu Matzah. So every time you have matzah, you have an opportunity to be mekayim the mitzvah of eating matzah on Pesach. But he says that the Leil HaSeder, it's like the Shmur Matzah that they ate. Not the Shmur Matzah, but the matzah that they ate on the Leil Shimurim, on the night that they left Mitzrayim en route to their freedom. But what was that matzah? What did they eat it with? It was, granted, it was flour and water, but it was flour and water, it was matzah that they ate with the Karban Pesach. It was the food of redemption, it was the mitzvah that they had, that they loved, that Hashem, before they ever left, and before it didn't rise. And then you have another aspect, a different type of achila, of matzah, of eating it for 7 days, and that's the matzah that represents redemption. So the matzah that's lechem oni represents, that's when Hashem chose us. Hashem chose us as those poor people who were on such spiritual lows, and yet He gave us this mitzvah, and this is our sole focus for the night. It's supposed to be this relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu over and over again. It's not about the political freedom, and it's not about the physical freedom. It's about the spiritual freedom. It's about the relationship that we have with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Avas Hashem, and the Emunah that results, that's part of that process. Then we move on to Maaseh B'Rabbi Eliezer. And the question is, why do we include this story? So there are a couple of answers. The first is, which goes back to why we break the middle matzah, is that none of the personalities that are mentioned in this story actually had relatives or ancestors who were involved in Shibud Mitzrayim. None of them were enslaved. All of them were descendants. They were either Kohanim or Leviim, which means that they were both of whom are from Shevet Levi. Shevet Levi, again, was not enslaved. Or they were Gerim, they were converts to Judaism, which meant that their ancestors were not involved. They weren't in Egypt. And so none of them really had this familial connection. And yet still, they were up way, way later than most of us are, delving into the intricacies of Shibud Mitzrayim and Geula until their Talmidim had to come and wake them up. Another answer is that Rav Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua were Talmidim of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Nasi, who was the head of Klal Yisrael at the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. But he was the one who literally saved Torah. When he says, Tein li Yavne v'chachameha, I can't hold on to the Beis HaMikdash, but at least let me have a couple of Talmidim from whom I'll be able to rebuild Klal Yisrael, Torah and Mitzvos and Klal Yisrael, the Mesorah. This was a time of incredible, incredible turmoil. The Jewish people, the Galus had just started, the Beis HaMikdash had just been destroyed, right? And Rachmana Litzlan, it continues to last for almost 2,000 years. And when we talk about the Leil HaSeder being a time of faith, then the Emunah from the whole year comes from the Leil HaSeder. So Ha'emanti Ki Adaber Ani Onisi Me'od. We talk about, why do we have to talk about Emunah so much? And the answer is because just thinking it often isn't enough. Right? You have to talk about, what does it mean to you? What does your faith in God mean? And to discuss it with other people and to clarify it and make sure that it's focused and it's sharp and it's clear and you really believe it. And if you can't give it over to somebody else, as Rav Chaim Volozhiner, about any facet of Torah, if you can't convince somebody else that you're right, you don't really believe it. It hasn't really, doesn't have an anchor deep down inside of you. And so if you can talk it about Emunah and to be able to give over your Emunah to subsequent generations, Hadore Doros, then you're proving to yourself that you are an Ish or you're an Isha of Emunah, of faith in Hashem. If we don't believe that the Seder night has this potential, so we're throwing away the future. But if we throw away the future, then we're also wasting the moment in the present. That the Seder night is not as powerful as it could be, and that also has an impact on the past, because we're casting doubt on what really happened and what the impact of that, what we call history, for lack of a better term, is really all about. And finally, they were in, where does this story occur? Where were they sitting? Where was the Seder? In Bnei Brak. Why? If you had to choose a place where the most exciting, uplifting, piercing insights would emanate from a Leil HaSeder that itself is going to be written down and documented and Haggadahs to be talked about at Seder tables around the world for thousands of years to come, where would that Seder be? Yerushalayim.
But it was destroyed.
Exactly. It was destroyed. Right? And yet, these were people who lived through the Churban, whose Rebbe lived through the Churban, and afal pichin, they're still sitting with this emuna pshuta, having faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that the chol hamarba harezim meshubach, that the more we talk about it, we can connect back to generations before us, that our faith needs to remain stark, it has to remain strong. Even if we have to, unfortunately, need to be in Galus, we need to be outside of Yerushalayim, we can't be in the Lishkans HaGazis, we can't bring the Karban Pesach, we have to be Nebuch and Bnei Brak, which, by the way, still Eretz Yisrael for those of us here in Galus. Right? But at least they were able to have a Seder together. And so they stayed up all night. Why all night? So the halacha, this is a misconception. People think we have to stay up for Leil Shavuos to atone for the fact that we were sleeping when Hashem came to give us the Torah. And this minhag has been especially spread throughout the corners of the Jewish world. But the halacha is, the actual halacha, the law is that a person is supposed to stay up all night on Pesach. But we don't do it. Why? Because we were busy cleaning for the past couple of weeks. Because you had 4 cups of wine. These are all very, very good excuses. And they're all good answers. Not even excuses. It's just a reality. Try and stay up all night. So Rav Matisyahu Solomon says, based on the Abarbanel, that the reason that we're supposed to be up all night is because how could... It's almost zecher, not lebeis hamikdash, zecher lemikdash, but rather it's zecher to the time of the Geula. If you knew... I talked to a kid who's going to camp, but think about the last time you went on vacation and how excited you were packing, and you probably couldn't sleep as well because you were so filled with anticipation and excitement and joy about where you were going to go the next day, and your mind is racing, you put your head on your pillow and you just can't seem to calm down, you're tossing and turning about, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to go to this place and I'm going to see this person, and it's going to be amazing. So if you hear the blood-curdling cries of the Mitzrayim who are finally getting what they deserve in Makas Becholos, and you know that in a matter of hours, if it's Kachatzos HaLaila, it's already midnight, and midnight means there can't be more than 5 or 6 hours until freedom is finally going to be ours, how could you sleep? You've been waiting 210 years for this. This is the next step in the process that Hashem, promised to Avram Avinu. You are Zocha to be part of the Geula. How could you sleep? And so we recreate that by staying awake on the Leil HaSeder. Chayav Adam Liros Es Atzma. We need to feel like we're leaving tonight. We need to be as excited, filled with anticipation, our minds racing about what Yerushalayim Habanuya is going to be like. Hashem's going to take us out and forget about Leil Shimurim. It's more exciting than that. This is a night of Geula. It's a night of redemption. And it's a night of emunah, of faith, that we need to have enough stored up that's going to impact the rest of the year. And so how could you fall asleep on the Leil Shimura? When you open the door for Elio, expect that he's going to be there. Mashiach is going to be knocking, waiting. You open the door, he's going to fall inside. That's the level of emunah that we need to have on the Leil HaSeder. What a pshat. And finally, just to end with one more. So after the story of Elazar ben Azariah, there's a Mishnah in Brach, we get to, that we need to recite Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? All we say it at night, we say it during the day, Mohavid Mos HaMashiach, the Rabbanon say, now they disagree. So if Soloveitchik says that this all seems very strange, the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim only exists on one night a year, and that is on the Leil HaSeder. The other nights of the year, the other days of the year, Olam Haba, it's all about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's a matter of mentioning. Mentioning doesn't require very much. Right? They're separate. Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim isn't a separate mitzvah, in the Rambam at least, because it's included in what mitzvah? The mitzvah of Kriya Shema, which is how we're Mekayim, the mitzvah of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. Rafael Moshe Luria says that when we talk about Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, but even though tonight the mitzvah is Sipur, because what we do tonight is to get this incredible shot, this injection of emunah that's supposed to last us the entire year. And it's supposed to inoculate us against the doldrums and the feelings of lethargy and depression and sadness that sometimes bog us down here in Galus, that we're supposed to get this incredible shot. And what is the Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim? What do we do every other day when we recite Shema? What is that? It's a booster shot. It's a little bit just to keep up your immune level, that you'll be able to fight off whatever dreary things happen in Galus today. And so it's a Seder because it gives us a Seder, a structure, and it informs our level of faith through the rest of the year. It's an investment, really. What we're doing is we're preparing in these weeks ahead of us for this opportunity of the Leil HaSeder, that Amir Tzashem is going to pay dividends throughout the other Moedim, the Yom Tovim of throughout the year, that ultimately is going to uplift us to a point where we'll be Zocha to the Gula Shlema. The Netziv says very similarly that the relationship between Zippor and Zechira is like a father, right? My wife's grandfather, Alav HaShalom, had so many stories. He was served in the army, and he was a communal leader, and he used to regale his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren with stories, to the point that they used to joke, oh, number 62, and they would just start laughing. You didn't even have to say it, but that was number 62. Now clearly, right, there was only one joke that you could laugh about like that. But if you said one word, there's a... what's for breakfast? And they'll say, scrambled, right? Why? Because there's this joke about an Indian who said, how, and how do you want your eggs, and scrambled, okay, and it's funny. All you need is a couple of words. So every night when you say, when you invoke the memory of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Shema, that's all you need to remember, oh, I have such a joke, there's such a story, there's such an experience in my heritage that I'm connecting to tonight. And then Leil HaSeder is the time when you lay it all out. You go into all the details, and it's like, oh, when is this? How long is this story going to go? But L'maisa, it's a beautiful story. And it inspires us, and it gives us that injection of faith that we need to be able to get through, hopefully not another year of Galus. But it's an investment. That was the message that everything else comes from the Leil HaSeder, Rishon Hu L'Chodshei Hashana, right, that we're going to read this Shabbos Emir Tzashem. And so if we take this focus with us, this focus on Avas Hashem, and this focus on Emuna Shalema, the Emir Tzashem, the feeling of Atava Chartanu, of Hashem choosing us, Hashem will choose us once again, and He'll take us out of this Galus so that we're not going to have to have the carbon, we're not going to have Pesach here, but we'll be Zocha to really bring the carbon Pesach in Yerushalayim, and all of us should be Zocha Lila Regel, and we'll be able to see all of those things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised for generations and generations coming true before our eyes, so that it should be Yishana Zu, Yerushalayim HaBnuyah.